Good evening. Hello? Good afternoon, good evening.
Malta.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You're the first to arrive, Malta.
Okay.
You want to start or you want to wait?
We're going to wait.
Okay.
Anna.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We're ready to start.
Yeah. When else on too?
Malta's on.
Okay, good.
So we're starting with Pasuk 351. From the Sulam commentary on the Zohar from Parasha Lech Lecha. And I'll start with the Lishem Yehud. Lishem Yehud could shabber to Mishkin Tabit, Hiluurkimu, Leakta, Lishem, Yudhe, Bavadhe, the Yehuda, Shalim, Bishem, Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, Lasok Torah Mitzvah. Vayhino amadunai Elohino alena maasei yadenu kodenei alena maasei yadenu kodeneihu. Ui teima hataninan leitzivuga ela lefum ovado viarcho devar nash hakehu vadai ii zake viovadoi Eat kashran bakel ha'u dileya le'it ha'bara le'ya kima denafek. The translation. You might say, but we have learned that a man obtains a mate according to his deeds and ways of behavior. It is assuredly so. If he is meritorious and his ways are correct, then he deserves his own soulmate to join her, as they were joined when they left the Holy One, blessed be he, before bonding a body. My commentary. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the pasuk is clear as written. What is the meaning of bonding a body? Questions, comments, thoughts.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I was giving time for someone else to speak because for the last few days I've been the one speaking.
What does it mean, the bonding of bodies?
That's the question. What do you think it means?
Are they back to back? Are they back to back?
Is that
what that
means?
I have no idea.
Their choice of who their parents are going to be and where they're going to be born and, you know, the time. that they'll meet each other. I think all those things.
All of those things are correct. But the most important thing is the literal meaning. Is your soul bonded to your body? Is your soul glued to your body?
No.
Is the nefesh level of your soul glued to your body?
Well, it stays with you, even in the grave, so I would think,
And where does the nefesh appear? In the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And bonding is like glue, right?
Right.
And our blood is consists
of a red...
Because
the bond is so close, that's why death is, you know, it's why the soul stays around for 3 days and sometimes seven and, you know, doesn't want to leave and keeps going back to the body and then finally gives up and moves on.
And
I guess the closer you are to physicality, the harder it is for that soul to want to leave, whichever soul part it is, you know.
That is correct. The more you're connected to physicality, the more difficult it is for the nefesh to leave the body. And it won't leave the body until that part of the body has decayed in the grave. And in order to remove the nefesh level of soul from the body, or the ruach level of soul from the body, it requires a beating in the grave. The body part has to be beaten so that the soul will actually leave it.
But if you pass away on the Sabbath, you bypass that beating, is that correct?
That is correct.
And if your body...
That's okay, go ahead.
And if your body...
If you pass away on the Sabbath, it's an indication that you've reached a level of righteousness, of a tzaddik or a tzaddiket.
Also, if your body doesn't decay, because there's been some known truth about a body and that didn't decay, or just part of the body, okay, the hand or the foot, whatever, but the body is still intact. And as in some of this with these graves, pests popping out of the grave, blood and so forth. So that body is not decayed, so does not get the pain as well, or maybe died on the Sabbath.
It could be they died on the Sabbath. It could be that that those parts of their body have become completely corrected.
Okay. And I see the binding. The first thing that came to mind was a marriage, you know, the female and also are united. And I see it as a contract of some sort in the body.
There is an agreement with the body. The body has a consciousness. The body has a consciousness. It has its desire to receive is for oneself alone. And the soul bonds with the body, and then the agreement is that the body will follow the directions of the soul, but that takes training. The soul has to be strong enough to direct the body, and the body has to eventually find its way to appreciate the soul's directions.
But they do share a connection because they're both going to be in the resurrection, the body and the soul is going to come back into the body. So they share that bonding.
The bonding never disappears. There's never a disappearance in spirituality. And even though the body is a physical entity, there's the bonding is represents the spiritual glue.
Right. Because of the loose bone, you know, the seed, that small particle of seed that was placed in the body, it will return to that body.
Correct.
And I truly believe that on Hoshana Rabbah, when we do the beating of the willows ritual, that it's an antidote. I don't know if that's the exact word, but to help us for the year. From if we pass away that year from beating in the grave. And I truly believe that from what I've studied and for a long time, for about 10 years, ever since getting Pinchas Winton's book on making the Aliyah, and he made the connection between the beating of the willows and the final letters of the Aliphat, the Sufi letters associated with those meditations as you make the Hakit
Bay. When you do that on Hoshana Rabbah.
Mm-hmm. I truly do. And that's why the last 6 years we've done it. You know, it's never done at our synagogue. It never has been. And 1 year, Judy and Tony and I went down to the synagogue and did it, and, you know, because I had the key. And then, you know, I hear so much about this is a Reform synagogue, you know, so I sometimes think they're talking to me personally. So we just did it in our sukkah. And 1 year we had to do it by telephone because it was on a Wednesday and they couldn't come. And then last year it was on a Sunday, so we had a group of ladies. And then this year it's going to be on a Sunday again. The following year it won't be, but I believe by that time, the group that's been coming will know how to carry their own ritual themselves. You know, they'll have had enough practice to at least know where to go in the prayer book to find it and what to do.
Understand.
So, Hannah, are you saying that when we do that year, it lessens the beating in the grave?
Well, there's a definite correlation to the two, and this year I finally found the book from Pinchas Winston that I had ordered maybe 10 or 11 years ago. And so this time, instead of putting it in the safe place, I've kept it on my coffee table all year so that I'd be able to copy that page so you'd have a reference to do your own research besides what's in the prayer books, the Orthodox prayer books.
The major idea behind the beating of the willows is that you are sweetening the judgments for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're leaving this year, Chas v'Shalom, then the sweetening of the judgments for the year would also apply in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a few ways to avoid the beating in the grave. Torah study is the easiest because it detracts from your desire to remain in the physical, to remain secular, to enjoy the. It gives you a balance for enjoying the pleasures of the physical world.
Okay.
I think most of us have reached that point. We don't care to go to ball games. We don't care to go to movies. All we want to do is study Torah or Zohar or be in your classes. So,
and I do appreciate that and do understand it, and that's very true, Donna. But that doesn't mean that you're also not attracted to the physicality.
No, but I think it grows less and less because it really meant something to you to be able to go shopping and get new clothes, and now you could care less, you know.
Well, that may have been when you were in your 20s or in your teens, but I don't think it's still true today. And that's what you're saying. You grow less attracted to physical things.
Mm-hmm.
In my own case, there's a jewelry display. It's not for jewelry, but there's a display for pictures outside of every door in this building, every apartment in this building. And all the people have pictures of their family, and they have pictures of events that they've attended and that they feel, you know, reminds them. And it's basically displaying something about their lives,
mm-hmm.
You know, and mine is empty. It's not that I don't have those things, but they're stored away because I have no desire to remember those things, because if I want to remember them, I have them in my memories. Leanna Ross. So it's just not an orientation that I find a connection to. And so that becomes the issue.
Issue for whom?
For me.
Oh, an issue for you?
Yeah.
I think you could take a picture of a Chumash and a Zohar.
And there are people who have the pictures of the Chumash, or they have Chumashim in the display case. They have Talits, they have Hanukkiahs, they have lots of spiritual items. But what are they doing on display instead of being used? Well, you know, you don't use the Hanukkiah all the time. But what's the consciousness of someone putting it in the display case? It's to share their life with others. And that usually means some connection to ego. That doesn't mean it's always that way. But, you know, there's two sides to it. The fact that my display case is empty causes people to ask me questions. Why is it empty? So it's attracting attention, which means I'm not part of the group. I'm setting myself up apart from the group. So these are issues that I deal with. You know, is that my ego expressing the fact that I'm identifying myself differently than others? Or is it for me keeping my ego out of it? It's the same idea, you know, when you see my name signed on emails, I don't have capital C's. I don't have the first letter capitalized. It's a reminder for me to take my ego out of the letter I'm writing to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it also draws attention that it makes me seem somewhat different and somewhat outside of the mainstream. And so am I doing it because it's going to draw attention to myself? Or is it doing it to help me not let my ego get out of control? What's my consciousness? And everybody has these decisions to make for themselves. And there's no right answer.
Well, I think we all experience the deeper you go, the more separated you feel. And I think people recognize it, too.
Yes, they do.
And, I mean, after a while, you just get to the point that you know that you're never going to believe, like, even your own husband or close friend or whatever. But in order for us to stay unified, there's a certain amount of bending that we have to do, like you say. And yet, at the same time, stay true to what we ourselves believe that we should do. And I think when you're trying to stay unified, then it kind of helps your intention to also know whether it's ego or not.
It does.
Self-check. You know, you have to ask yourself, you know, okay, why am I doing this or why am I not doing this?
Very true.
You know, I used to experience that every time for years, you know, no one baked challah. And, of course, I got all these raving reviews, you know, and I used to have to really fight that I wasn't baking that challah for compliments, you know. And
I do understand, but at this point in your life, it's not, probably doesn't even cross your mind.
Well, now others have come out. Now there are others baking challah, even some of the men. So finally, after 25 years, you know, I'm seeing the fruit, you know, of finally others beginning to pick up the mitzvah. And it always kept me humble because I never knew, you know, if that particular loaf was going to be sticky in the middle, not quite cooked or whatever, you know. They kept me up.
Understood.
And when they would give me a compliment, oh, you make the best challah, and I would say, no, I'm just the only one baking it now. And which was the truth. I mean, you know, so it's something we have to always fight, and sometimes we don't recognize that it's ego. You know, so
One of the Midrash stories about Hanoch ben Yared, the man, the seventh generation from Adam, the man who walked with God and God took him. One of the Midrash indicates that based on certain letters in the verses of it, around his name, that he was a cobbler. He made shoes. And the Midrash goes on to explain that the intention when he was making the shoe, he was injecting the consciousness of Chesed constantly into that shoe. So that when someone was given the shoe or received the shoe from his hand, and they put it on their feet, it would be like they were flying because the elevation of the shoe was so high because of the intentions of love that he injected into the shoe. Because it wasn't that he was studying Torah like we study Torah, because the Torah hadn't been given yet. But what he did was concentrate on wanting to be close to Hashem. And knowing Hashem was sharing, that was the energy of Hashem, he would inject that same desire to be close to Hashem into the shoe. And so when someone put the shoe on, they were elevated. They were brought closer to Hashem, and they felt that energy. Felt like they were flying when they were walking in one of his shoes. At least that's what the Midrash says.
Well, that's probably the best test when you do an action or a mitzvah, is to ask, why are you doing it? You know, if it is to get closer to Hashem. And that's, to me, the best way of knowing, okay, why are you doing this? Are you doing it because they did you a favor at one time, and so you feel obligated to help them? If that's it, then it's the wrong attitude, you know. So the idea of, are you doing it to come closer to Hashem, is probably the closest test you can give yourself in testing yourself. So I agree with the Midrash.
Correct. And no, we're striving to do our actions, our mundane actions, going to work, cooking in the kitchen, bathing, brushing our teeth, all of these mundane actions. Why are we, what is the consciousness, what's the intention that was recommended to have? And the intention is that we're taught in Kabbalah, the highest level, is that we are doing that action to become closer to Hashem. We're doing that action to use the tool that Hashem has allowed another person to create for us to use. And when you have that consciousness, it doesn't happen often that we really focus on that. But when we do, the mundane task becomes Torah, becomes living Torah. Very much amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're out of time. So I wish you all a good evening, and hopefully you'll join us for the 7 o'clock class tonight, which is 9 o'clock your time.
Right.
Shalom to all. Have a beautiful evening.